Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to this edition of Inside Scoop Live. This is one of many features presented to you by Reader Views. I'm your host, Gail Campbell. Hello, and thank you for tuning in. Today I'm chatting with Vicki Landis about her book, Europe for the Senses, A Photographic Journal. But before we dive into her book, I'd like to tell you a little bit about Vicki. She has been soaking up Europe for about the last 6.5, nearly 7 years. And although educated in music and holding down a day job in the humanitarian assistance field, as well as working on a master's degree, her free time, if she can find it, and apparently has found it, has been spent supporting her travel and photography addictions. With a current list of some 44 countries under her belt, Vicki strives to find the overlooked details that make each place distinctive and unique. Europe for the Senses, A Photographic Journal, is her first published book and has been featured on television, newspapers, radio, and various internet sources. She, her military husband, and their son, now about 7, recently returned to the States from Stuttgart, Germany, where they lived for a number of years. Vicki, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
I know you're in the middle of unpacking and getting settled in, and we had a hilarious exchange of emails regarding the process of moving.
That's right.
Now, yeah, obviously I've already revealed a little bit of the essence of the book. It's a photographic journal. But tell the audience a little bit more about what the book is about and what prompted you to write it.
Well, as you know, there's millions and millions of travel books out there, it seems like, and I actually use them religiously when I travel. But when I started writing my book, I wanted it to be more than just displaying European destinations. It's a collection of photography and creative writing together, and it's meant to transport the reader to each respective destination, and I use stimulating sensory imagery to go along with that. I wanted the reader to experience more than just looking at a picture. I wanted them to have not only the sights, but the smells, the sounds, the tastes, and the touch of what makes Europe a remarkable compilation of uniquely beautiful countries. And whether you've never gone or whether you've been plenty of times, I'm hoping that my book invokes a craving for Europe, not only for the major sites that attract so many, but the small and the overlooked details that are just waiting to be discovered.
Well, that's right. You know, I think what you've done here is great. I think all of us, if we really did enjoy traveling, and I enjoy traveling so much, and it is great fun to get out of the main metropolitan areas and into the little countryside areas and see the culture in which people really live, which is so different from ours, and experience the joy in that. I mean, the differences are what are magnificent,
right?
Not the commonalities. And I mean the unique scenery, the unique collectibles, the unique foods and drinks, and as you pointed out, of course, history over there, history to us here in our country is really kind of laughable when we think about history over there.
Absolutely,
you know, it's thousands of years there, and of course there may be obviously there's thousands of years here. It just didn't get captured.
Right.
And so. What prompted you to write this? Your grandparents had a lot to do with this, didn't they?
They did, and I had never thought of putting together a book. It never occurred to me. And when I started traveling, when I would get back from a trip, I would send an email with attached pictures to my family and my friends, and I wanted them to feel what I was feeling when I was standing there. So not only did I stick in pictures, I would describe the place. And again, whether it was a famous place or something nobody had heard of. And then one day my grandparents had said, hey, you know, why don't you put this in a book? This is great stuff, and other people want to read this too.
Mm-hmm.
So I sat on the idea for about 2 years, and it wasn't until the very beginning of 2005 that I actually start working on putting the book together, and then it was published in January of 2006.
Wow. Now, your son is how old now?
He's 7.5.
And the reason that is poignant is because as I understand it, that at the time that your husband, who's in the Army, is that right?
Uh-huh.
Was first ordered to go to Europe, Germany apparently at that time, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was not exactly one of those ideas that you were particularly fond of following through with, was it?
Absolutely not. I was livid. I was so upset. I had just graduated college, just had a baby, we just had a house, and there was an Army base just good enough RV base, just 40 minutes away from our new house. So I thought, why can't he just work there? You know, instead they're sending us to the other side of the world. So I went kicking and screaming, but after a little bit, after getting settled in and starting to learn the area, I was hooked. And then it was me saying, hey, let's stay a little bit longer. So we ended up staying for about 7 years altogether.
Right. It's my understanding that each time he had a chance to re-up and come back to the States, you were like, oh, let's stay here a little.
Exactly. Re-up, but re-up for Stuttgart.
Exactly. And, of course, Germany is in a perfect location to be sort of like a home base so you can branch out and go see. And you, as you said, 44 countries.
Yeah, actually it's 45 now. My last one was Egypt.
Oh, fabulous.
Mm-hmm. Right before we got back.
That is wonderful. And it's true. I mean, Egypt, of course, is on the African continent, and, and Germany is on the European continent, but still, relatively speaking, those are very close to each other as compared to being from here to there.
Right. It's just I think, 3 hours with the layover. It was a three-hour flight.
Right.
So very easy to do.
Right. And you know, there is a gift, and you have the gift to be able to capture the essence of what you're seeing and write it in such a way as to create a desire on the part of the reader to want to go experience that.
Yeah. And a lot of people, I found, are afraid to travel, even people that were stationed with us in Stuttgart. There were plenty of families that didn't go outside the circle of familiarity. So what I hope to do with this is to develop a yearning. And if somebody has a yearning for it, they're not as scared to take that first step and get out and see it.
Right. Now, what were they afraid of?
It could be any number of things. They were afraid. Now, my issues were I was afraid of getting lost, which, you know, when you don't know the language and you don't know the culture and you don't know the area anyway, that can be very, very scary.
Exactly.
So I think that's one of the biggest hindrances is, you know, afraid of getting out there and not being able to find your way back, or not being able to communicate with people because, you know, you don't know the language.
Right.
I found that the German people were very understanding. As long as I tried a little bit, and my German, I speak with a horrible American accent, but I would rather them say, oh, great, you're trying, you know, rather than me just start speaking English and them saying, well, how do you expect to come to my country and speak your language and expect me to know that?
Mm-hmm.
So as long as I tried, they were very happy and they were very willing to help me out. You know, and I got lost a number of times, but I found the people were just very helpful and got me right back on track.
Right. And, you know, it is so true. I've known many Americans who would go to a foreign country and come back just scratching their heads, wondering why in the world those foreigners weren't speaking English. And I'm like, you're
exactly.
on their soil. You're in their home.
Exactly.
English is not the universal language.
Right.
It's one, but it's not the universal language.
Exactly.
And so you're right. It is, and of course, what you speak about, that is a common fear of anybody in a foreign land, is of getting detached, getting lost from the people that they know, the group that they're with, and not being able to find their way back. And you're so right. My experience also was with Germans and Austrians was that they were so willing to be helpful, and it just thrilled them to death for you to try to speak their language.
Right. And they would even laugh, you know, okay, that's great, especially if you spoke a little bit of the vernacular of the region instead of proper German, you know, maybe threw a little slang in there on accident, and they thought it was absolutely hysterical. So you even made more points that way.
I remember how fun. Well, Vicki, tell us, and this is going to be a hard one to respond to because, I've tested that out for myself, but of all the 45 countries that you've been to and the many different things that you've seen, not that you didn't love every single one of them, but were there any one or two that really stand out for you?
I think Italy is where my heart stayed. When I first hit Italy, my son and I had gone to Pisa and Florence when my husband deployed, and I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the people, the food, the culture, everything there was to enjoy about it. When I went back, it was to go to this cooking school that a New York chef puts on for like 5 or 6 months out of the year, a week at a time. She comes over to Tuscany and does week-long cooking schools, and I had gone, and that's when I really fell in love with the region, the countryside, the rolling hills, the sunshine, the vineyards, and that's when I knew that was where I wanted to go back to over and over again.
Wow.
That so I think Italy is where my favorite country is.
And now throughout your travels, in all of them, did you always take your son with you? I guess you had to, didn't you?
Not every single one. For Africa, I've been to 12 different countries in Africa, so I didn't take him for those.
Mm-hmm.
I went mostly for work, so I didn't get to take him. But for the most part, yeah, I would take him, and he's a fantastic traveler. He's been traveling since he was a baby, so he was used to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually think he's traveled to more places than my husband has, unfortunately, because he's been deployed quite a bit.
Right. He was working in a different area.
Well, exactly.
And now it's got to be just a major part of who your son is and will continue to become.
Right, right. He can, you know, reminisce about certain things. Of course, he remembers things differently than I do. In Pisa, I remember, of course, the Leaning Tower and how the echoes, how long the echoes would hold in the baptistry there in the piazza. He remembers getting an incredible Hulk sucker, you know, things like that. So it's different, but he still remembers it, and I'm very glad because that's something that a lot of his peers don't have.
I know it. And that's sad. I know for me personally, History came alive when I started traveling. It was one thing to read about it in school, but I really couldn't put it together until I began traveling. And once I began traveling, I was like, oh, wow, there's no way that any history book I ever read captured what I was seeing, you know, and
exactly. Exactly. And the things, like you said, they're so much older. In the States, we can see something that's, you know, 100 years old, and, oh, it's an antique, oh, stay away, it's cordoned off, and you can take pictures with no flashes. But
right.
In Europe, you can walk through a monastery that's 1,000 years old, and you can wrap your arms around the cold stone pillar. You know, you can touch these things, and
mm-hmm.
this is just a part of their everyday life.
I know it. And how beautiful is that? You know, history is important. It leaves a lot with us about what's happened in the past, and we gain a lot of wisdom from it. But it's also a big part of who we really are, and so it's not for us to turn our backs on.
Right, definitely.
Well, Vicki, of all the places that you have not yet been, what are you looking forward to seeing next?
Well, I have not been to Spain or Portugal,
mm-hmm.
and I definitely want to see those. And my dad's side of the family is of Irish descent, and
mm-hmm.
apparently we come from a long and proud line of Irish grave robbers. So I do need to get to Ireland eventually.
Oh, that is hilarious. Yeah, Campbell being Scots, I know I've been confronted with my heritage as well.
Are you thinking, yeah, oh dear, what has my family done before me?
Oh, I know. I was accosted a few years ago in New York by a group who said, hey, your forebears slayed ours. And I'm like, but I wasn't there. I just did.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, no, I'm so sorry.
Can I buy you a cup of coffee?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, that was, it was so, we all died laughing. It's like, here we are, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years later.
Oh, that's hysterical.
I know it. Now, what about Spain, Portugal, of course, and Ireland? Ireland just holds itself out as a fantasy land almost.
Mm-hmm.
And I that's one country I haven't been to either, and I would love to go and spend some time there. But tell me what about Spain and Portugal entices you.
Well, I love the architecture.
Mm.
One of my things when I take pictures, I'm crazy about arches, I'm crazy about architecture. And some of the cathedrals that I've seen in Spain in pictures, I would just love to be able to stand there in front of them and just feel so small and see how majestic they are.
Mm.
I also spent a number of years in Kansas City, Missouri, and they've got a plaza there that's modeled after Seville, Spain, and it's absolutely beautiful. So I would love to be able to go to Seville and see where that inspiration came from.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And Portugal, I've just one of those places I've never been, and they've got the Lipizzaner stallions there, and so I would just love to go there as well. Spain and Portugal is real easy. They're right there next to each other.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Absolutely. And now, even in Ireland, the home of your father's forebears, what about Ireland speaks to you and appeals to you there as well?
The green rolling hills.
Mm-hmm.
I love Italy. One of the reasons why I love Italy is because of the green and the sunshine. I know Ireland has less sunshine than Italy does, but it looks so green in the pictures. You want to go and eat it up. It's absolutely beautiful.
A roll in it,
exactly. So, yeah, it's probably cold, and that's fine, but I would just love to see those green hills.
Now, you spent some time, of course, in England and in Scotland as well, correct?
Scotland I haven't been to yet, but yes, England, we spent a long weekend in London.
Ah. And, you know, it's my understanding that, of course, I mean, I know it's rainy and cold there a lot, but it's not always. They have their sunshiny, warm days, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had a good mixture of rain and sunshine when we were in London. And it's a fun, bustling city with people that, you know, if you are afraid to get out and travel, England is perfect because they speak the language.
Exactly.
If you don't have to run a car, if you stay in London and you can take the tube everywhere, that's just one less thing that you have to worry about driving on the wrong side of the road.
That's right, on the opposite of what we're accustomed to, right?
Exactly, wrong side for us. But it's nice even on the ground as you're walking around and you go to cross the street. If you look down on the ground, it will say, look this way, with an arrow pointing the other way.
Oh, good.
So you know which way to look so you're not hit by a car coming the other direction.
Exactly. And, of course, if you're a Texan, you already know to look both ways, because in Texas, a one-way road does not guarantee anything.
Oh, no.
Well, Vicki, now, it's mentioned here that you also worked while you were there. What did you do?
I spent 6 years working for the European Command. It's the combatant command there in Stuttgart. And my job was in the humanitarian assistance realm. As all these bases close, we're left with literally tons of property that we can't use anymore. These are things that schools have used or hospitals have used or offices have used that we just don't need anymore in our stocks. So instead of filling a landfill, my job was to find poor schools in Africa and in Eastern Europe, or clinics or orphanages, things like that, to ship those items to. So instead of being trashed, we're using them again, and we're using them for people that aren't as fortunate as Americans are.
What a wonderful idea.
Exactly. It was a fantastic job, very rewarding.
And this gave you the additional opportunity to do some traveling, didn't it?
Right. I was able to go to, and I don't know the exact numbers, but I know in Africa it was 12 countries
mm-hmm.
with work, and then several within Eastern Europe. So,
and find a repository, so to speak, for the furniture and equipment that was being salvaged off of the property that the U.S. had held, correct?
Exactly. These are things that the U.S. taxpayer had paid for, and they got a lot of great use
mm-hmm.
with the Department of Defense. But when they're, you know, not needed anymore, the Department of Defense uses them to as per humanitarian donations. It's very nice to see these items that are in good condition to be used for people that can't afford it.
And, countries that can't, that are much less fortunate. And, you know,
exactly.
I didn't know that sort of thing existed. It makes sense to me that it does, but I'll bet many people listening to this had no idea that in foreign bases and what have you, other foreign countries where there were U.S. Representations, that those things would be used for the benefit of the developing country on which we were serving.
Exactly. And not only does it help those people, but it also helps the United States as well. It gives us a better name. They see us helping them. We get so much bad press in a lot of these countries where they've got an anti-American propaganda.
Mm-hmm.
And this shows them that, you know, the U.S. is not all bad. You know, everybody's got their problems, but we're not just going to trash a desk because we don't need it anymore. Instead, we're going to make the effort to get it to your country and get it in place so that your children can go to school and get an education. So there are also two other programs within my office where they also built schools and built clinics. So if there wasn't a school or a clinic in an area, we could build one, and then my property could go into that place as well.
Fabulous. And so it wasn't just school desks and office furniture, but it also included clinic environment equipment,
mm-hmm.
and I'm assuming health clinic environment.
Exactly.
Equipment.
And when you think about HIV/AIDS in Africa,
mm-hmm.
and you know President Bush is fighting, you know, working to get that AIDS problem under control, this is just another way that we can help do that.
Absolutely. I am so glad to hear that, and I hope that really reassures many listeners that, you know, on the one hand, when our country, the United States of America, seems to step forward and be willing to offer military power to assist countries that are being overtaken by saboteurs, is what I'm going to call them.
Exactly.
At first, we're seen as the carrier of liberty. But not long into it, we wind up being seen as just bullies.
Yeah.
And we're not seen for having a huge humanitarian desire deep in our hearts,
mm-hmm.
to help others that haven't been able to experience or achieve yet what our country has.
Right.
And so for the beauty of their history, they've also had to pay a high price in terms of not many of the countries in terms of not experiencing the kinds of liberties that many European countries, England, France, Italy, many others, Germany, Austria, in terms of being liberated and free to enjoy commercialism, free speech, freedom to practice religion of choice, all sorts of freedoms of choice.
Absolutely.
And, that's awesome. Now, are you doing anything like that now that you're, I realize you've just gotten back. You're still trying to unpack. I was about to ask a really silly question here, forgetting that we were talking about unpacking rocks that your son brought back.
Exactly.
from his travels. That was so funny.
Yeah.
So do you plan to get involved in something similar to that now that you're back in the States?
Well, I know that every combatant command within the Department of Defense has a humanitarian assistance program. Unfortunately, we're not stationed at a base where there's a combatant command.
Mm-hmm.
So I can either start looking at private organizations, non-governmental organizations, because I'm sure there are some of those in Columbia, South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
But just other government work as well. It doesn't necessarily have to be humanitarian assistance, but I did was program management, so I can get into that as well.
Yes, you have a wealth of experience to bring to whatever arena you choose to be involved in, Vicki. Well, what a wonderful experience you've had traveling in 45 countries around the world and being a participant in humanitarian endeavors on behalf of the United States government. I applaud you. Thank you for that.
Thanks.
And Vicki, we are just about out of time. Do you have a website, a personal website?
I do. It's europeforthesenses.com. All one word, yeah. And you can go there to find out more about my book. I've got lots of different press spots on there. I've also got an online photography gallery with every single picture that's in the book is in the gallery. And just all kinds of different information on the book, and I have links to my blog as well.
Fantastic. And obviously there's got to be another book in the making here.
Yes. I've got a couple of different ideas, and I've started working on outlines and, you know, getting basic information started on a couple of different things. So I don't know which one I'm going to jump into next, but yes, there will be another book.
Well, whichever one it is, it'll be the right one. Of that, I'm certain. Vicki, I want to make the audience aware too that this interview will be posted to your author's page on Inside Scoop Live, and that's Vicki V-I-C-K-I, correct?
Yes.
Landes L-A-N-D-E-S.
Uh-huh.
You will have an author's page on Inside Scoop Live where this interview will get posted. And Inside Scoop Live, Reader Views, your website, europeforthesenses.com, will all have links to this interview. So
great.
I want to encourage everyone out there to take a look and take a listen and consider purchasing this book for your own wonderful library as well as as a gift for others that you know that have enjoyed their own travels throughout Europe or who are planning a trip to Europe. So, Vicki, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks a lot.
And audience, thank you for tuning in to this segment of Inside Scoop Live. I'm your host, Gail Campbell. Until the next time, bye.